Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. This morning, prosecutors dropped all charges against the remaining three officers to be tried in the arrest and death of Freddie Gray. Gray was fatally injured in police custody last April, so there will be no convictions in Gray's death. We're going to talk about that decision during this hour, as well as what, if anything, has come from the effort to prosecute six police officers for their roles in Gray's arrest and transport. We'll hear from community leaders, and we hope we'll hear from you. You can tell us what you think of this development if you call us at 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780, or email us at midday@wypr.org. Officer Garrett Miller's trial was set to begin today. Miller faced charges of second-degree assault, misconduct in office, and reckless endangerment. Officer William Porter, whose trial last December ended in a hung jury, was slated for retrial in September. Porter faced charges of involuntary manslaughter, second-degree assault, misconduct in office, and reckless endangerment. Sergeant Alicia White's trial had been scheduled for October. She faced charges of second-degree assault, misconduct in office, and reckless endangerment. In a fiery press conference during the past hour, State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby spoke to why she decided to drop charges.
We stand by the medical examiner's determination that Freddie Gray's death was a homicide.
Yes, yes,
homicide. However, after much thought and prayer, it has become clear to me that without being able to work with an independent investigatory agency from the very start, without having a say in the election of whether our cases proceed in front of a judge or a jury, without communal oversight of policing in this community, without real substantive reforms to the current criminal justice system, we could try this case 100 times and cases just like it, and we would still end up with the same result. Accordingly, I have decided not to proceed on the cases against Officer Garrett, Sergeant Alicia White, or to relitigate the case against William Porter. As a mother, the decision not to proceed on these trials, on the remaining trials, is agonizing. However, as a chief prosecutor elected by the citizens of Baltimore, I must consider the dismal likelihood of conviction at this point, the judicial economy in proceeding further, and the divisive impact that continuing this prosecution could potentially have on our community.
That was State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby speaking within the last hour at Gilmore Homes, where Freddie Gray lived. Three other officers, Officers Caesar Goodson and Edward Nero and Lieutenant Brian Rice, already had been acquitted of all charges. Officer Caesar Goodson Jr. drove the transport van in which Gray sustained fatal injuries. He had faced the most serious charges against any of the officers, second-degree depraved heart murder, and he was acquitted. Joining us by phone to help us digest what happened this morning is WIPR's Metro reporter Kenneth Burns. Kenny, welcome back to Midday.
Thank you for having me, Sheila.
So tell me what happened in the courtroom this morning, how this unfolded.
Well, I knew something was up when Chief Deputy State's Attorney Michael Schatzo and Deputy State's Attorney Janice Bledsoe were sitting at the side where they have sat for the last five trials. They technically weren't supposed to be here today. It was supposed to be two different prosecutors, the clean team, if you will, because they heard Officer Miller's testimony during the trial of Officer Edward Nero. But as soon as the case was called, Chief Deputy Schatzo made the motion to nolo presc, or decline to prosecute the charge against Officer Garrett Miller. And this was repeated in succession afterwards with the remaining three officers, Officer William Porter, Sergeant Alicia White, and after that, and the gag order was lifted, which led us to today, I'm here at Gilmore Homes in West Baltimore, where, as you mentioned, a fiery State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby finally had a chance to defend herself and her charges.
And what did, aside from lifting the gag order, what was the reaction from Judge Williams?
There was no reaction from the judge. Much like the previous trials, Judge Barry Williams had kept it down the middle. He just acted on the request of the prosecution.
Defense Attorney Warren Brown, who has observed these trials, he's not defending any of these officers, but he's been watching these trials closely, has joined us by phone also. Warren Brown, welcome back to Midday.
Thank you.
What's your reaction to this news?
Well, I'm not really surprised. This should have been done some time ago. She even mentioned in her press conference that you played a portion of that, you know, she could do this over and over and over and get the same results. So why? So the question becomes, what took you so long to get to that point? Because really, after Nero, the warning signs were there, but certainly after Goodson, it was clear. And so, you know, but they moved on to Lieutenant Rice. You know, I mean, this was the result of a failed, rushed prosecution. Nobody brings charges of this magnitude against all of these police officers in 2 weeks. You just don't do it. We know they didn't have the help of the police department in the investigation. We now know, contrary to what they said a year ago, that the sheriff's department didn't help them in their investigation. So it was a rushed investigation by the state's attorney's office that took all of 3 weeks to bring charges. And this is the result of it.
Well, then, what is your view as to why this was the point at which the state's attorney decided to drop all the charges?
Because they were, you know, actually, with this Castigar hearing that was scheduled for today, they now became the prey. They've been the predator all along, but now they were the prey. They had to go in. They were in the crosshairs of the defense. They had to go in and show that this there had been this Chinese wall, so to speak, that this clean team had not been tainted. And in the most recent filings by Officer Miller's able attorney, Catherine Flynn, she made it very clear that they had evidence that there had been this taint, that there had been a bleeding over of cooperation between Chantal Bledsoe and the clean team, which violated the whole spirit of this Castigar, this issue. And I don't think that they felt as though they would become in that the results would leave them unsullied. I think that they believed that the results would impugn the integrity of how they dealt with this, since it was determined that Officer Miller would have to testify.
Kenny Burns, you've been covering these trials intensely. Had that that risk that there had been a contamination between the previous prosecutors and the prosecutors who were to try this case against Garrett Miller, was that something on your radar screen?
That was, because everyone from the Court of Appeals in Annapolis, Judge Williams himself, had warned prosecutors that you have a very high bar to reach to show that your case will be clean against Officer Miller, that your case, well, he said this at the time for Officer Porter, because this is really kind of what pushed everything into later this year. We should have been wrapped up and done with all the trials by now if we had stuck to the original schedule. But the judge in here in Baltimore, the judge in Annapolis, warned the Chateau and Bledsoe, you have a high bar to reach to show that your case is clean, that you didn't fear anything from Officer Porter or Officer Miller's testimony to include in your case. And just as a reference point, the next two trials, we were going to see the clean team. The next trial would have been that of Officer Porter in September.
That's Kenneth Burns, WIPR's Metro reporter, who has been covering the trials of the police officers charged in the death of Freddie Gray. Here on Midday on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us by phone is Warren Brown, a defense attorney who has been watching these cases closely. And you are welcome to join this conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. I want us to hear how State's Attorney Mosby this morning described some of the changes that she said will protect citizens from police. This from her press conference this morning at Gilmore Homes, where Freddie Gray lived.
Never again should there be a question as to why someone is being stopped, detained, or arrested due to the fact that there will now soon be full implementation of body-worn cameras on all officers.
That's right.
Never again should someone be placed unsecured and defenseless in a metal wagon head first, feet shackled and handcuffed.
Come on. Right.
Yes. Due to the fact that officers are now required to secure and seatbelt all prisoners.
Come on.
Yes. Never again should there be a need to rely on circumstantial evidence to observe what takes place inside police wagons due to the fact that cameras are now equipped in every one of them. Never again should an officer ignore or neglect a prisoner's request for medical attention to no avail due to the fact that it is now mandatory for officers to call a medic when requested. Never again should a commanding officer or a rank and file officer be able to assert that they are unaware of departmental policies, general orders, or procedures due to the fact that there is now a software verification and accountability system to ensure their adherence. Never again should an officer exhibit a blatant or reckless disregard for human life due to the fact that there are now use of force policies that emphasize the sanctity of life, accentuates de-escalation, and requires that officers intervene if fellow officers cross the line. You see, what I've learned through this experience is that every battle, every hurdle, every obstacle that we've overcome since the pursuit of these cases has brought us one step closer to equality, and that any and every step towards equality in our justice system is well worth fighting for. This system is in need of reform, and when it comes to police accountability, and as long as I'm the chief prosecutor for this city, I vow to you that my office and I will fight. We will fight for a fair and equitable justice system for all, so that whatever happened to Freddie Gray never happens to another person in this community again.
That was State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby speaking at the Gilmore Homes this morning after her office dropped all charges against the six police officers charged, or the three remaining police officers who were to be tried in the death of Freddie Gray. Warren Brown, Marilyn Mosby at that press conference did not say she made any mistakes. She essentially seemed to be saying the system was rigged. Do you think she makes a fair point in sort of claiming progress in the points that she mentioned, the changes that she said?
Well, yeah, there's been progress, but it didn't have to come at the expense of these six officers and their families and public safety in the city. I mean, she could have impaneled a special grand jury to investigate, you know, the absence of cameras in the back of vans. All the changes that have occurred could have come through a special grand jury that could have been convened as a result of what happened to Freddie Gray. No, this was a rushed decision to prosecute somebody, and it had to be these officers, and then she chose willy-nilly almost to make it these six officers. How can you do a thorough investigation culminating in these charges in 2 or 3 weeks? It's absurd, and you don't even have the benefit of the police department or the sheriff's department. I mean, it's a rush. What was the rush? But again, any systemic changes that resulted from this the pursuit of these cases could have come, like I said, from other pursuits. You didn't have to, you know, sacrifice these officers to get to that point.
You ask what was the rush. Some would say that it was because the city had rioted, that there had been briefly riots, and there was concern about further unrest.
Yeah, I got that. But I also understand that unrest had quelled for about 3 days before May the 1st as a result of the omnipresence of law enforcement and the National Guard. I don't buy that you sacrifice these individuals, that you rush the judgment because of these, other considerations, which, again, quite frankly, were not that much of a consideration at the time that she brought these charges. She could have, on May 1st, instead of bringing the charge, she could have come down the same steps of the War Memorial, approached the same podium, addressed the same community, and said, listen, we are investigating this. We are on it. Just give me a little time, but I promise you it will be a thorough comprehensive investigation. I'll leave no stone unturned. Just give me that opportunity. That you know, she could have done that. She didn't have to rush and charge these guys and this woman and bring these charges. And, you know, the evidence just didn't fit the charges. And, you know, that old adage, if it doesn't fit, you must have quit. And that's exactly what you had here. And the shame of it is that it created this expectation on the part of the community that justice was being done and just the opposite was occurring. If they approach, and they do, quite frankly, you know, John Doe and the average Jane Doe that comes through these courthouses in the manner that they did in this case, those people would be upset. They would be bothered by it. They would yell and scream about an abuse of prosecutorial discretion. But, you know, because of the acrimonious relationship between the police and certain portions of the community, you know, it was all of that mattered not. It was simply that somebody's got to pay. Somebody's responsible for Freddie Gray's death, so somebody's got to pay. We don't know who exactly, but somebody has to pay.
Kenny Burns, you covered the press conference that we just heard part of at Gilmore Homes. What do you have any sense of what the reaction is in the neighborhood? We're going to be talking to community leaders a bit later, but I was wondering what you picked up being there.
People were very supportive of the state's attorney as she walked up to the podium, and they cheered her on as the news conference took place. In fact, they even supported her at different times during her statement. Also, keep in mind, they also feel that the system is still very much rigged against them. They feel that this is another example of police officers getting away with wrongdoing.
I have to let you go. We have to take a break here in a minute. But before I let you go, Warren Brown, one last question. Several officers have brought civil cases against State's Attorney Mosby for what they say was malicious prosecution. Will dropping these remaining charges help her in those cases?
No, it's not going to help her in those cases. It may hinder her in those cases. The, you know, argument being that, you know, there was not evidence sufficient to convict, and so she should not have proceeded with the prosecution of the cases. I think the biggest problem for her is going to be in the discovery process where the interrogatories, depositions, and they're allowed to depose and speak to, for example, the detective, I think her name is Taylor, that worked on the case, that they depose and interview other assistant state's attorneys who played a role in all of this, the sheriff, how he came to pass to sign off on these things and what they said. So I think the civil is going to pull back the curtain on the state's investigation that led up to the charges. And if that reveals a certain malice or a certain the end justifies the means, then I think there'll be some problems for these folks later on.
I really appreciate you joining us this afternoon.
No
Thank
problem.
You. Warren Brown, a defense attorney, here on Midday on WIPR. As I said, we're going to take a quick break. Kenny Burns, are you able to stay with us?
Actually, I do have to get going.
Okay. Then let me ask you very quickly before we take this break.
Sure.
The administrative reviews. The police department has said that after the acquittals that the police officers still faced an administrative review. Briefly, what can you tell us about that and where these, what that means for these officers who have now all been acquitted?
Well, the reviews were supposed to be completed at the end of each trial, but now that those trials are over, there's no word from the Baltimore Police Department on when those reviews will be completed. They did not put out a statement yet. They said that one is coming shortly.
Kenny Burns, I appreciate your bringing us up to date. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Kenny Burns is WIPR's Metro reporter. He has been covering the trials of the officers charged in Freddie Gray's death. As I said, quick break here. We're taking your calls at 410-662-8780. Your emails at midday@wypr.org. When we come back, we'll talk to some people from the community about how this decision is playing. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this hour about the news that all charges have been dropped against the police officers charged in the death of Freddie Gray. State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby stood in Gray's neighborhood this morning to defend her decision, her original decision to charge the six officers and now to drop the charges.
As I previously stated, the decision to prosecute six police officers was not and has never been an indictment on the entire Baltimore Police Department. Although some have tried to invalidate my family's long-standing service as public officers, I know firsthand the sacrifices, the dedication, the commitment it takes to protect and serve our communities. For those that believe that I'm anti-police, it's simply not the case. I'm anti-police brutality.
State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby this morning. Here with me in the studio now is Ray Kelly, Director of Community Relations for the No Boundaries Coalition of Central West Baltimore. No Boundaries is an advocacy organization led by its residents that works to empower Central West Baltimore across boundaries of race, class, and neighborhoods. Ray Kelly, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And your reaction to what's happened this morning?
Well, now, I won't say I wasn't surprised that all three officers had their charges dropped this morning, but in the community, we felt that the inevitability was either acquittals or they just weren't going to prosecute the cases. Like State's Attorney Mosby said, it's the system that we're up against. Those are the policies are what has to change for there actually to be accountability within the police department. I think the whole trial process has proven that the system is not structured to convict police officers. They're part of the system. So I feel like from a community advocate and a policy worker, we appreciated that attention that the trials actually got towards actual policy change, where for the No Boundaries Coalition and groups like that that work for legislative change, and we weren't really expecting a conviction, so to speak. We were more working in concert with trials to keep that exposure going on the system that we're actually trying to change here.
So you think, even though no one was convicted and now no one will be, that the process, the court process, the fact that police officers had to stand trial is part of why you're seeing some change?
Definitely. Like Attorney Brown said, and I won't say I agree with anything more than the fact that he said that this hasn't been done before. It's not normal to indict police officers as fast as they indict us on the same type of situation. And he and people that kind of disagree with what she did have to see it from our perspective. Is now no one is accountable for the death of Freddie Gray. You know, there's like emphasis on how she rushed to validify these six officers when someone has to rush to say this kid was killed. It was ruled a homicide. So now we see that no matter how or what happened to Freddie Gray, the system is saying it can't be a police officer. No use even trying to prosecute it. And that's the message that's being portrayed from that, is we have to change this structure for there actually to be equality and police accountability.
We played the clip, you listened to it with me, of some of the changes that Marilyn Mosby sees, like cameras in the vans, like clear way of transmitting regulations to individual officers so they know what is required of them. She listed several changes. You're looking for more.
Well, we're definitely, those structural changes within the police department are small steps, and we appreciate every small step. And we still want to keep our focus on the ultimate goal, which is civilian oversight and police accountability, transparency, and process. We know from history that the police department are incapable of policing themselves. There's no accountability within, because there's a brotherhood that's been established for centuries.
That's Ray Kelly, Director of Community Relations for the No Boundaries Coalition of Central West Baltimore, who's here with me in the studio on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the decision to drop all charges against police officers in the death of Freddie Gray, and there are lots of people who want to be part of this conversation. Joseph has called us from Baltimore. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. The speaker you just had on covered a lot of the points that I would have covered, except that I think that this is the accountability and the first accountability that we've seen from the police department, where they actually have to defend their actions.
I'm sorry, I missed your verb. They actually have to what, their actions?
Defend.
Okay. Do you think they have?
Well, you know, because there was no cooperation from the police, you know, it was very hard to prosecute this case. But I can assure you that if it were an ordinary citizen with just as much circumstantial evidence, they would have gotten a plea deal out of it, because an ordinary citizen would not have had the resources that the policeman had to defend themselves in court. So, you know, I'm pleased about what the state's attorney did. I think that it did tamp down the temperature in the city, and who knows what would have resulted had the indictments not been offered. So, you know, I came away from this whole thing with a very positive feeling that the police are now on notice that they're not immune, that they can be dragged to court just like any ordinary citizen and have to defend their actions.
And Joseph,
Go ahead.
Finish your thought.
In this case, somebody was alive before they went into custody, and they wound up dead. Shouldn't someone be held responsible?
Joseph, I appreciate you making all those points. Ray Kelly from No Boundaries Coalition, I wonder how you read it. Joseph is sort of making two points. One is that he says police are on notice, that they will have to defend actions, and yet he also says what we see here is that police aren't convicted.
So I agree. I mean, that's what happens for us as advocates, is we get that exposure to all of this. Like, this is the system that we are up against. These are the issues that we are trying to change. And luckily for Baltimore, we do have the Department of Justice doing an investigation right now to actually see this as it actually transpires. As the civil rights team investigates, this is definitely has to be some kind of accountability for the life of any human, where it was ruled, and still, because of the structure, we have these protections, so to speak, in the law enforcement officer's Bill of Rights, and there isn't the same process in a homicide case for officers that there are in homicide cases for civilians. As you see, they 10-day rule back then, and they can
officers who are accused of wrongdoing have 10 days
to get
before they need to respond internally.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many privileges they have as officers, so many protections, actually, that they have in the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, that historically they don't get convicted of these type of crimes. Really, the department is structured in that type of military, where they only answer, so to speak, to a tribunal, the little interior entity that kind of reprimands. But there is no accountability outside of the department, and there has never been.
You raised the review that the United States Justice Department is doing of Baltimore police, which, and I don't have sources. I don't know why we were collectively expecting that that review might have been issued early in July. We're now very close to the end of July. And one wonders, again, I don't pretend to have sources within the Justice Department that would tell me, but one wonders whether this decision, this wiping the charges away of all the officers charged in Freddie Gray's death, is part of what the Justice Department will include in its review.
And I'm sure, and I think it may have taken a little longer because of the series of events that's happened over the past months and the trials and in Baltimore City, so to speak. We had so many other issues outside of the trials with the little scooter vigil and so many confrontations with the police where this is staying a hot issue in the city. This is something that we feel needs to be addressed immediately for us to actually progress and start to rebuild and create a sense of reconciliation between the two.
Tara Huffman has joined us. Tara Huffman is Director of Criminal and Juvenile Justice at OSI Baltimore. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
I know your time is limited. What's your reaction to what happened today?
I can say probably what a lot of people in Baltimore City can say, which is not surprised, disappointed, but understand the decision that State's Attorney Mosby made. Agree that it is a good decision at this point, and it underscores what she herself and her office knew from the very beginning, which is that holding these officers accountable, bringing the charges, and pursuing justice in this frame was just one component of what is and will continue to be a longer fight for justice and equity in Baltimore City. I think the state's attorney's office did the best that they could with what they were working with, and I think that they have helped to support the drumbeat, the ongoing message in Baltimore City that law enforcement officers are not above the law, and that broader reforms are needed in the city to make sure that we achieve justice and equity for everyone.
State's Attorney Mosby spoke quite angrily this morning, standing in Gilmore Homes, about various actions by some in the police department that she said undercut her investigation, undercut the charges, undercut the prosecution. Do you expect that all of that, what she said, what she believes, will be part of the review by the U.S. Justice Department?
I wouldn't be surprised, because when the Justice Department comes in and looks at an issue, they don't just look at the police department. They look at how the police department interacts with other parts of the justice system, and they ask, in order for the police department to achieve the reforms needed, how else do we need other partners in the system to respond? And to the extent that that department is doing things either by policy or practice that bring about inequities, how is that also impacting and furthering inequities in other parts of the system? So, you know, the state's attorney's office, the judiciary, those are not the focus of the department's investigation, but there's no way they can ignore those other parts of the system, even as they look and ask the question, what needs to be done to bring about equitable policing in Maryland?
Well, many people have said, Ray Kelly, I'm curious as to what you think. I'm not sure that you and I have talked about whether these trials created even a more acrimonious atmosphere between residents and the police in the city? And if so, what does this decision today mean for that relationship?
So definitely not. I think just this whole procedure has created so many conversations, so to speak, around the city between the community and officers that have been lacking for years, where because it's so in front of the media and it's getting national attention, that these conversations are happening on a regular. So there is, in a, on a smaller scale, conversations about how we are going to change it, where everyone is recognizing things have to change. We have to remember that in a community like ours in West Baltimore, once again, justice isn't going to come from a conviction or a settlement. It's going to be about actually changing the ways that our communities are being policed and changing the dynamic of the police community interactions in West Baltimore, and just creating a sense of equality throughout the city with the police department is what our Black communities are looking for.
Tara Huffman.
Sheila, if I could respond to that?
Yes, I was just going to ask you.
I just want to be very, very clear. No, I do not believe that the trials produced any more acrimony between the community and police. I think it's, we need to be very clear that it is the actions of six officers on April 12, 2015, that exacerbated distrust that already existed between police and the community. Anytime you have a situation like this, it is responses from people in places of power who would rather put their head in the sand and pretend like no one did anything wrong, even suggest that the victim hurt himself or is somehow responsible for what happened to him or her. That is what creates acrimony between the police and the community. On the flip side, when you have a department or leaders within the city, including within the police department, who stand up publicly and say, we agree something's wrong here. These are the actions that we're taking to figure out exactly what the wrong is and how to fix it. That is the thing that begins to rebuild trust between the police and the community. So to Commissioner Davis's credit, I believe that he has publicly, as well as internally, taken steps to move the department from a place where it has actually earned the distrust of the community into a place where it can earn the trust of the community once again. And so we have a long way to go, and there are a lot of people that have to be involved in this process, including the community. It isn't just on the police, but to the where it is actions of police or inactions of police officers that are leading to hurt and damage and heartbreak in communities, then it is on the part of the police department to own that and take steps to fix it. And then on the part of the community to recognize when a department is trying and is moving in the right direction, and then come along beside the department to help make the change happen.
Tara Huffman, I appreciate your joining us. Thank you for your thoughts.
Thank you again for the invitation, and it's good to hear from you, Ray.
Hi, Tara. Good to hear you, too.
Tara Huffman is Director of Criminal and Juvenile Justice at OSI Baltimore. And Ray Kelly from No Boundaries Coalition is able to stay with us. I hope we're going to take a quick break and come back with more of your calls and emails. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. midday@wypr.org is our email. Be in touch. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this hour about the news today, the surprising news to many people, that there will be no criminal convictions in the death of Freddie Gray. The prosecution has dropped all the remaining charges against police officers. Here with me in the studio is Ray Kelly from the No Boundaries Coalition. After State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby spoke with the press this morning at Gilmore Homes, Freddie Gray's stepfather, Richard Shipley, also spoke.
We stand behind Marilyn and her prosecuting team.
Yes, we can.
And my family's proud to have them represent us.
That was Freddie Gray's stepfather, Richard Shipley. We got an email from Therese, who says, I may be a minority on this opinion, but I was very surprised and angered that Stephanie Rawlings Blake and the family of Freddie Gray, paid the family of Freddie Gray $6 million of taxpayer money without due process. How does that decision look now? What programs that Baltimore needs to meet the needs of the community were affected or cut from the budget? Who reviewed that decision and signed off? I've never heard of such a thing. This is somebody questioning the settlement for Freddie Gray's family. Do you think, is that a question that reaches your mind on a day like today, Ray Kelly?
Not at all. And I just feel like that was another chapter where that's closed, and to speculate now keeps us once again from moving forward. We can always look back and criticize someone else's actions, but really we have to come together and get a plan moving forward that we can actually implement the changes that we seek.
And I want to ask you exactly what you mean by moving forward, but I also want to talk to Charlie, who's calling us from Owings Mills. Charlie, welcome to the show. Charlie, are you with us?
Yes.
Could you speak up a little bit, Charlie? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Yes. Hello. So I wanted to make a point about something which me and some people I know noticed during the prosecution. So from my understanding, it was Michael Schatzo who was actually doing the prosecution in court and not Marilyn Mosby. And the fact that Schatzo went and did things like not bring up the fact that officers are required to belt in people who they arrest or not bring up the entire route of the van, which as far as I know was actually something they knew, and just bring up like a little bit of camera footage and then go ahead and drop the rough ride argument during Goodson's trial. The fact that he did things like that made me believe that he either was very incompetent or was intentionally throwing the case. And I was very disappointed that Marilyn Mosby did not remove him from the case.
Well, she said, as you may have heard, Charlie, this morning, she said just the opposite at her press conference. She said she was very proud of her prosecutorial team, and Schatzel was the first person she credited. Ray Kelly, is there any concern that you pick up in the community about the competency of the prosecutorial team? I mean,
no,
obviously, Charlie,
no, definitely
voices
not. I was at the press conference this morning in Gilmore Homes. I mean, 100% the community was behind the state's attorney from the beginning. There's always a question on tactics used within the community, but really, for the majority of the parties, you could hear in the press conference, everyone supported it. We as a community feel like it's not an individual or the state's attorney herself that is an obstacle to change. It's actually this whole structure, the system itself, is what needs to change for there to be a shift in the paradigm of community and police relations.
Well, is there any sense from the testimony that did come out at the trials that were held that, sort of picking up on what Defense Attorney Warren Brown said earlier in the show, that there may have been evidence, but it didn't fit the charges, that perhaps a different set of charges might have gotten more results for the community?
So my perspective will be not from being in that courtroom, and I definitely try to stay away from the judicial system, and I let that run its course. But I will say that there is no book on best practices on how to convict police officers in Baltimore City. It just doesn't damn happen. I mean, there can be all this criticism, but no one else has been able to do it. It's not like this is how you do it, and attorney such and such has all these groundbreaking cases against police officers for killing black people. It just doesn't happen. Everything was new, and huge steps were taken just to actually go forward with that type of prosecution, where I couldn't possibly question anyone's legal tactics. I'm definitely no lawyer, but like you said, I know that there's not a lot of convictions going on police officers for killing black people in this country. So,
so when you talk about moving forward, what is it that you most want to see happen?
Right, and I kind of appeal to the community that even though this phase of our fight has passed and there won't be a conviction in the Freddie Gray case, there's still a strong push within the community to kind of change the policies that govern our police officers and the legislation that kind of protects them. So there's still active groups that are rallying before the next general election to make sure that things that we won in Annapolis this past session, like the changes to the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights and the voting civilians on Baltimore City Police Trial Boards, that actually can go into effect October the 1st. We want to make sure that we don't lose focus on the big picture, what we've been trying to achieve since before Freddie Gray, was to change these policies, to change the structure of the police department's disciplinary procedures so they could have accountability, so they could have transparency in the process, and they could actually have civilian oversight. I think the trial boards being open to the public is going to open a lot of people's eyes to what's going on, and we just have to stay involved. We have National Night Out next Tuesday. It'll be plenty of observances all around the city just to kind of bring light to this issue. No Boundaries will have one right at the Pennsylvania Avenue Triangle again, and this is our chance to keep the momentum going until we actually get the change that we want to have.
National Night Out, Tuesday, what time?
Tuesday at 6 o'clock.
At Penn and North?
At Pennsylvania and Pressman, Pennsylvania Avenue Triangle Park. This is our third annual National Night Out, and we kind of ring the bells and we raise up the victims of violence. And I don't know, it's always a chance for the community to come together and speak on this very issue. And we have to make sure that we use these type of opportunities to bring people together so we can continue to push for these policy changes so they can show up in November to make sure that we have representatives that are going to push for the changes that we want to see. People have to remember the election's not over. Even historically, it ends in the primary in Baltimore City. We still have issues that we haven't ironed out with these presumptive candidates, so we want to make sure.
Ray Kelly, I appreciate your perspective. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Ray Kelly is Director of Community Relations for the No Boundaries Coalition of Central West Baltimore. Earlier, we talked to Tara Huffman of OSI, and we're grateful to them. We're grateful to you for being part of the show. Lunch for our midday guests provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies, locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the Square in Canton and 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Savory pies and quiches. Thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow for an hour a serious environmental problem you may never have heard of, the global shortage of sand. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.